Well, good afternoon, Juno, on a windy Friday. We've got a strong wind warning now, as a matter of fact, through late tonight for downtown Juno and Douglas, gusts up to about 45 miles per hour. Today on Juno Afternoon here on KTOO News, in Juno, you're going to be hearing from Karen Fortwangler about the Helping Hands Toy Drive. Carissa Sleppy will drop in to tell us about Tidal Echoes. We'll hear about high school hockey. There's a Friday and Saturday game versus Chugiak. The City Museum is having their coffee and collections thing on Saturday with a special program on Sidney Lawrence. And we'll hear from Andrea Budbill, who's running the J. Juno Douglas High School Freshman Poetry Program. All of that's coming up on Juno Afternoon, so stay tuned.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nations leader says he'll go to court if he has to with the Manitoba government over its closure of a smoke shop for not paying taxes. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The owner of the Dakota Chundee smoke shop in western Manitoba was fined $10,000 by the Manitoba government. The shop was raided several times since it began selling tax-free cigarettes nearly a year ago. And provincial authorities obtained a court order that allows them to take ownership of the store. The shop bought its cigarettes from a company that makes them on a Mohawk reserve outside of Montreal. The cigarettes sell for about $40 a carton, less than half the average price. Chief Frank Brown recently appeared in court and was hit with the $10,000 fine after being found in contempt of court for continuing to operate the smoke shop in the face of an injunction order 6 months ago. Brown remains defiant.
How did they have jurisdictions to take ownership? When we don't have a treaty with Canada. And our territories are still our territory. That's the question, that's the issue right now.
Brown's First Nation and the reserve in Quebec claim a right to trade with each other outside tax rules. But Manitoba says anyone selling tobacco in the province must have a provincial license and must pay tax. Nearly 30 Dakota First Nations members, including Brown, said they would be camping out at the smoke shop in opposition to the province's expected takeover of the property. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Ballot counting continues in southeast Alaska as a race is closely watched. Tristan Autone reports.
As a result of redistricting, Alaska Native voters have keenly watched two races in southeast Alaska, Senate District Q and House District 34. In both races, Alaska Native incumbents were challenged. In Senate District Q, Democrat and Alaska Native Albert Kukesh lost to Republican Bert Stedman. However, in House District 34, Alaska Native Republican incumbent Bill Thomas holds a two-vote lead over challenger Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Nicole Hollingstead, who works with Alaska Native corporations and the 2012 Native vote, says over 160 absentee ballots have yet to arrive by mail, but what does arrive will be counted November 16th for a final verdict.
And we hope that the Alaska Native vote will increase that lead as any remaining ballots come in. And for anybody who ever doubts that their singular vote makes a difference, this race proves that every single vote counts.
As votes continue to be counted, Hollingstead says Alaska Native voters will be watching intently as issues like energy costs, infrastructure for telecommunications, and transportation are high on the list for Alaska Native communities and are in need of champions in the state's legislature to tackle those issues. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Northern Arapaho tribal election didn't happen Thursday and is now set for December. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov has more.
First, the tribe will conduct a new primary later this month. The original primary election's results have been voided because Arapaho Business Council members said one candidate, Kim Harja, should not have been on the ballot. Harja is supposed to sit out until 2016 because she was previously dismissed from the council. Francine Shakespeare, sister of business council chairman and incumbent candidate Jim Shakespeare, initiated a successful petition calling for a special general council meeting. Only 144 Arapahos attended, voting to void the primary results and remove all election staff, including election judges. They nominated new judges. But Jana Rising Sun, the ousted head election judge, says that's a small number of people to speak for a tribe of 10,000. And the original elections were conducted in the same way they always have been, by an experienced group of all-female election judges.
Are you guys saying that it wasn't a good election, we didn't follow resolution? That's one thing that I make sure we do, is follow resolution.
Rising Sun says if there had been legitimate problems with the election process, those should have been brought to light long before the primary was held. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
During this week in 1978, the Indian Child Welfare Act was enacted to help keep Native children with Native families. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is KTOO News. It's 5 1/2 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. And my first guest is here in the studio with me. Amber Morgan is here from Helping Hands. Hi, Amber. Let's do that again, and I'll turn your microphone on this time so everybody can hear you. So, Amber, you kind of got drafted into this, you said, last night.
Yeah, it was kind of a last-minute throw-on-y kind of thing.
Okay, well, we'll work together through this. Can you tell me what Helping Hands is?
Helping Hands is a local nonprofit agency that is made up of volunteers. We work together to help feed the families in Juneau so no one goes hungry.
So you have a place where you can where people can actually come to you for food?
Yeah, we're located in the Schweitzer Village Rec Hall, and they're open Tuesdays and Fridays from 5:30 to 7:30 to the public, and we pick up from local stores. And
just now you have a couple of things going on because of the closeness of Thanksgiving and the beginning of the Christmas season. There's a toy drive, I think, starting right now?
There's a couple of them, actually. Kathy Buell with Night Moods is offering a balloon bouquet for in exchange for an unwrapped toy. And from now until the 21st of November, there's a toy drive going on at the Moose Lodge.
And are there specific toys that you're looking for, or age groups, or how does that work?
The range is pretty broad. We ask that they are new toys and unwrapped toys so that we can give them out to the families that we think would enjoy them the most.
So if someone would go and buy a toy or several toys, and what would they do with them then? Bring them to someone, or do they call and have them picked up? Or what?
They could right now take them to the Moose Lodge, or they could take them to Night Moods. You can also drop them by the warehouse in the Schweitzer Village. And if neither of those locations work or you can't come to the rec hall, you can contact Betty Kapler at
789-4390. 789-4390. 4390. Okay. And do you, like, for instance, have a list of toys that you're seeking or anything like that, or is it just go to the store and buy something nice?
I don't think that there's a list,
okay.
No.
Okay. Now, you also have a couple of fundraisers going on, and just immediately you're just in the process, I think, of putting together the some food baskets for Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, Helping Hands likes to they like to put together food baskets for the people that they typically see at the warehouse, and they usually do 60-plus food baskets. We're not quite there as far as having all of the supplies to fill those boxes. Somebody was very generous and donated 20 turkeys, but we're still a little short. You know?
So you need turkeys, you need
turkeys, cranberries, all the fixings.
As I heard someone say, everything you would like to see on your table at Thanksgiving is
right.
Welcome, but it needs to be canned or you won't take fresh food.
Yeah, canned, non-perishable.
Right, okay. And then there's a program that you were telling me about before we started that involves some grocery bags at Safeway. What's going on there?
I'm not entirely sure about that one, but Safeway is doing a fundraiser for Helping Hands. They have pre-made $10 grocery bags that you can just offer to purchase, And from what I understand, the contents of the bags will go towards the families that Helping Hand serves.
I see. So on checkout, you would be offered the opportunity to buy a $10 bag, and then
yeah.
that goes to Helping Hands, and they take care of the distribution.
Yeah.
A nice, very easy way to give something, to give a little help at this time of the season, right? Okay, so the toys are the beginning, but the most important thing, I think, right now that we need to talk about is getting you supplies for these food boxes, because if you're going to do... If you're going to do 60 food boxes with 20 turkeys, you're going to have to do the Solomon thing and cut them in half or something. So
yeah.
you need some more turkeys, right?
We do need some more right. turkeys. Yeah.
Okay, so if someone wants to give you a turkey, what's the drill? What do they do with it?
They are welcome to contact Betty Kapler at the number before, or
okay.
just stop by our warehouse. There's typically somebody there Monday through Friday.
So 789-4390 is the telephone number that they can call if they want to make a donation. I'm assuming you could take money and buy your own turkeys if someone wanted
yeah,
to give you cash.
Yeah, or if somebody even wanted to donate some time.
Okay.
You know.
So you're going to need labor assistance for filling these boxes and all
that
stuff?
Well, we're always looking for good people to help out, you know, but yeah. Helping out with the food boxes would be great.
I know you got pressed into service here. Do you have a sense of how many people are involved with Helping Hands?
As far as volunteers,
how many volunteers? Are there?
I would say, you know, probably around 50,
oh,
50
okay.
plus.
So, but you can still use some additional initiatives.
Well, you know, we kind of break it out. We have people that help for the fundraising events. We have people that help specifically on distribution nights. We have people that go and pick up food and unload it at the warehouse, put it in the freezers, and there's a lot involved. So,
how'd you get involved?
Well, my mom kind of helped start this when I was real young, so I'm just kind of being grandfathered in, I guess.
So you've been in a household that believed in giving and like that, and just kind of slid in that
yeah.
direction.
Yeah. Well, my family moved up here in 1992, and I think there was a need back then. I mean, there's always going to be a need. People are in tough times and. My mom and Betty met each other and did this whole grassroots thing where they met and gave food out of their garages and contacted local churches to give out food. And so it's grown a long ways from when we began.
Well, terrific. It sounds like a wonderful organization. It's doing some wonderful things. If people want to donate toys, they can drop them at the Moose Lodge. We need wrapped toys. Unwrapped toys for the Night Moods mm-hmm. toy drive, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And right now you're in need of stuffing for another 40 or 39 baskets.
Yeah.
Yeah. To fill out the 60 that you think, but it's an approximate figure. Anyway, if people want to do that, they can contact Betty Kapler at 789-4390. Amber, for getting pressed into service at the last minute to come and speak to us about this, I think you've done extremely well. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Pat.
What a surprise. I thought the Lutes had quit. It's about 14 minutes after 3 o'clock, and my next guest is here with me. Evidently, this week is the beginning of the time that submissions can be made to the University of Alaska Southeast's literary magazine, Tidal Echoes. And so with me here in the studio is Carissa Sleppy, and she's the person who's going to put it all together, I guess. Is that right?
I'm kind of in charge of collecting submissions and getting everyone to submit, but yeah, putting it together.
So this is a school-related project at UAS, but it puts out a really professional magazine that has some wide distribution through Southeast Alaska and around the rest of the state, I think.
Yeah, it's produced pretty much by students, and there's an editorial board made up of several different members from the community and the college and such, but yeah, it's the region's only literary arts journal, so we take submissions from anyone living in Southeast, and it's pretty exciting.
So when will this edition of Tidal Echoes actually be on the stands?
Well, we launch the book. It'll be available for purchase April 19th. 2013.
So this is a long-term project for you. When did you start working on it yourself?
I started the beginning of fall semester, and we've been actually taking submissions ever since then. But so it's a fall intern type position.
So from August to April, you're going to be up to your knees in this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the deadline for submitting is December 1st, and then we go through and find the ones that we think would be good in the journal.
Are you liking it?
Oh, yes. I've been getting so much experience. Just I wrote an article for the student newspaper. I'm on the radio. I've done interviews. It's amazing experience, and definitely I'll use it on my resume. It's awesome.
Are you a Juneau girl?
I actually grew up in Bethel.
Oh, okay.
So I'm kind of a transplant, but I love it in Juneau.
You like it down here, right?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So did you come down for UAS? Or?
Yep, I came down to come to school.
Okay.
I went to school in Bethel for a couple years, and then I came out to Juneau 3-4 years ago and just to visit, and I really loved it. And I visited the school, and I decided this is where I wanted to finish out. So,
yeah. So what's a major?
English.
Oh, okay.
Creative writing.
It fits.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you'd said wildlife biology, I would have wondered.
English all the way.
Okay, English all the way. Cool.
Yeah.
So when you have when this thing is all, when you have all of the assemblies and you've gotten all this together and you put it together, you're going to be looking at this book. When you write up that thing on your resume, what are you going to say?
I'm going to say that I got experience in dealing with several different aspects of writing and compiling and dealing with people and how the written word affects people. I mean, it's not just English people, too. I mean, like, we have people that submit stuff from biology majors, or it's all over. And I like to look at how it kind of encompasses our lives, and it's kind of hard to put into words, but
yeah.
It's been an awesome experience. Just
are you a writer yourself?
Yes.
Did this change you so
yeah,
far?
Yeah, actually, I've been able to see from an editorial point of view what editors are looking for, which is helpful in my own submissions into publication, so definitely.
Well, terrific. What do people have to do in order to submit a piece to Tidal Echoes?
Okay, so we take prose, poetry, and artwork. Mm-hmm. And if you want to submit, you can email it to us, titleechoes@uas.alaska.edu, or we'll take them for, you can mail them to us, and that's on our website at the University of Alaska. And what we're looking for when someone submits is their address, a cover letter, which kind of gives us where they're from, and then biography, which is just a short, here's who I am, here's what I like to write. And then a release form, which pretty much just says, you know, you're allowing us to publish. So.
And when's the last minute that someone could submit something and still have it get into the book?
December 1st.
December 1st. So yes. Between now and December 1st, if you've got a piece, you need to get it to Carissa.
Yes.
She's the one who's going to actually make the big selection and get it all move forward to the editorial board.
Yeah, right? I collect it, but I don't pick and choose. I give it to the editorial board, and
right.
they select.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Carissa, it sounds like an incredible project. Great responsibilities for an English major, and a great opportunity to be involved in this thing.
Definitely.
Thanks for coming down and telling us about it.
Thank you.
little music by Marion McPartland to kind of move us toward our next little talk here. Not totally appropriate music, I would have to say, for the sport that we're going to discuss here, because I have three members of the high school hockey team here. With me are Cole Cheeseman, Todd Baston, and Kevin Sigler. So, guys, we only have one high school hockey team in Juneau.
Yes.
So, how does that work? When we split the high schools, then the basketball teams, I think, became got a different set of competitors, right?
Mm. Yeah, but hockey stayed the same.
Yeah. So, who all are we playing with in our league? Who are some of the teams that you guys will meet this year?
North Pole. We already played them. We beat them. Kedai, Homer. Soldotna, Chugiak that we're playing tonight, and
we're in a conference. What's our conference called again?
I'm not sure. We're in a conference with Lathrop.
Yeah, a lot of the Fairbanks teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Anchorage.
Yeah. So, you said before we started that you're 2-for-2 on the season.
Yeah.
Who were the other two games? You said you'd played North Pole.
We played North Pole and Kenai, and we won both those games 4-2, and then we played Homer, and we lost that game 5-3, I think. Yeah. And then we played Soldotna and lost 4-1.
So how's Chugiak as an opponent?
I think they'll be pretty good.
Yeah.
Most of the Anchorage teams are pretty good, and they're really competitive. Like, we played East last year, which was the first Anchorage team we played, and they were really fast, competitive.
How do you fit being on a team like this in with your schooling?
It's hard, but you have to get over it and work around it.
You have to keep a certain GPA to stay on the team.
Yeah, C average.
Our coaches usually put school first, so we need to make sure we have everything in before we can practice and play games. So that's the top priority right now.
Did you all play in younger leagues?
Yeah, there's a league called JDIA. It's just Parks and Rec, and we all three of us have played in it.
Uh-huh. When did you start playing?
I started when I was like 5 or 6.
Did your family play hockey? Did you?
No,
our whole family plays hockey.
Yours did?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. How about you? My dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were pushed into the sport?
No, it was just.
You said if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now how often do you guys have to practice?
4 days a week.
4 days a week?
Yeah.
Three days, we have practice at 6 a.m, and then on Tuesdays we have it at after school. So.
This is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get up, you have to be on the rink at 6 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and you practice for what, an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's off to school.
Yeah, and then Monday, Wednesday.
Maintaining the C average or a little bit better.
Yeah, and then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if we don't have a game, we do dry land at 4.
What is dry land?
It's like a workout off ice, like just a workout.
Like running or
yeah, like conditioning, yeah. Weightlifting, yeah. That kind of stuff.
You guys are in pretty good shape then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think you'll go on to college sport?
Is that an
option?
That takes a lot of devotion because there's like an intermediate league where you have to play like 2 to 3 years to go into college sports. So,
how does the rest of the school respond to you? Do they recognize you guys as like a team for the school? Are you?
Are you
VIP guys?
kind of.
We get some comments for dressing up every Friday. Usually, we have to dress up in like a suit and tie.
I should mention that the team is mostly wearing suits and ties here, so that's required as part of it. Yeah. Yeah. And so when you do that, everybody notices right away, I would imagine, knowing how people dress at the school.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, normal. Not in normal clothing, I should say. You look fairly normal to me. Anyway, so when you go up against a team like Chugiak, do you guys prep for it? How do you, do you have like films or video or
sometimes
or usually coaches like have seen the team before and like see what they do and we like try and work around them and so
and
better.
When we played Soldotna, like one of our mistakes was not breaking it out So we worked on that in preparation for Chugiak.
For the maybe two people on that we could have in our listening audience that don't know what that means, could you tell us what breaking it out is?
When the puck is in our defensive zone, we have to get the puck out and to the other side in the offensive zone. So.
And against Soldotna, you weren't able to do
their
that?
Team kept trapping the puck in our zone, so. Oh.
Which is how they got that, what'd you say, 5-3 score?
4-1.
4-1, okay, yeah. Okay, so what do you know about Chugiak?
What'd
the coach tell you?
Supposed to be pretty good this year. They lost 10-2 to the team that won state last year, Diamond.
Uh-huh.
And so I think they'll be pretty good this year, Chugiak will.
How do people get into the hockey game? Do you buy a ticket at the door, or do you have season passes? Or
you can buy a season's pass, but you can also get in at the door. I think it's like $8 for adults, and then $5 for like.
It's $3 for students, I think.
Yeah. So eight for adults, three for students. Yeah. What time's the game start?
8:00 tonight, and then tomorrow at 7:00.
So 8 tonight and 7:00 tomorrow, and these are both games against Chugiak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys all starting?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. So I'm talking to Cole Cheeseman, Todd Baston, Kevin Sigler, members of the high school hockey team from Juneau. And tonight at 8, they're going up for the first game against Chugiak out of Anchorage. And tomorrow there's a game at 7 o'clock. So go out and support the team. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 16th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of W.C. Handy, born Florence, Alabama, 1873, the son and grandson of Methodist ministers who did not approve of his going into the music business. They expected him to become a minister. He became a piano player, went on the road with bands, wound up in Memphis, and he became the first person to write down the music that would become known as the blues. His first song, Memphis Blues, later his most famous song, St. Louis Blues. He was the first person to write sheet music for it and to make it accessible for mass consumption. It's the birthday of the novelist Andrea Barrett, born Boston, 1954, author of fiction about botanists, oceanographers, geologists. Her novel, The Voyage of the Narwhal, came out in 1998. It's the birthday of the novelist Chinua Achebe, born in Ogidi, Nigeria, in 1930. His great-uncle was the man who first received European missionaries into his village. His father was an early convert to Christianity. Achebe, the boy, was baptized as a Christian, spent his childhood reading the Bible every day. Went to a school run by Europeans, read Charles Dickens and Jonathan Swift and Joseph Conrad. His novel Things Fall Apart came out in 1958, one of the first novels ever written about European colonization from the point of view of the colonized. And it's the birthday of the novelist José Saramago, born in a little village northeast of Lisbon in 1922. Parents couldn't afford an academic school, so he went to a technical school, became an auto mechanic. His first novel, Land of Sin, came out when he was 24 years old. Then he stopped writing fiction for the next 30 years, until in his mid-50s, unemployed, blacklisted by the government for his political activities, he went back to writing fiction. His novel, Raised from the Ground, about three generations of a peasant family, and his novel, Blindness, in 1997. A year later, 1998, José Saramago won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear at the Vietnam Memorial. The last time I saw the name Paul Castle, it was printed in gold on the wall above the showers in the boys' locker room next to the school record for the mile. I don't recall his time, but the year was 1968, and I can look across the infield of memory to see him on the track, legs flashing, body bending slightly beyond the pack of runners at his back. He couldn't spare a word for me, 2 years younger, junior varsity, and hardly worth the waste of breath. He owned the hallways, a cool blonde at his side, and aimed his interests further down the line than we could guess. Now, reading the name again, I see us standing in the showers, naked kids beneath his larger, comprehensive force, the ones who trail obscurely in the wake of the swift, like my shadow on this gleaming wall. At the Vietnam Memorial, a poem by George Bilgear, used here by permission of the poet on the Writer's Almanac, supported by PBS, presenting The Dust Bowl, a new film from director Ken Burns, starts Sunday at 8, 7 Central, on PBS. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 27 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. And Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a studio full of people here. Kimberly Naylor has dropped in. She's the public programs coordinator for the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and she's brought an army of guys with her who are evidently going to deliver a talk tomorrow at Coffee and Collections, which is a regular feature at the museum. With Kimberly, walked in Mike Blackwell, Jim Carity, and Richard Karstensen, and they're going to do the talk, I guess, as part of the program. So, Kimberly, tell me what the occasion is.
Sure. The museum is closing the exhibition for Sidney Lawrence. His paintings have been up all summer, and so we're closing that, and we are celebrating Sidney Lawrence's paintings in Juneau.
In addition to your natural charm, what brought these guys with you?
They're volunteers with the museum. They've been working with the museum and with the Historical Society for a number of years, I believe. And they have a lot of experience as far as what the paintings were painted on for Sidney Lawrence's collection.
So, Mike, they identified you as the fearless leader here. What can you tell us?
Sidney Lawrence came to Juneau often for relatively short periods of time, a week or two, from about 1915 until near his death in 1940. He visited here painting, photographing, and sketching. And we've rounded up a few of the results of those visits. And we're going to talk about them tomorrow, not so much as art, but more what's in the picture. Where was it? Where is the scene of the painting? And what do we see in it? And we're different. I'm a geologist. Jim's a historian. And Richard is a naturalist. So we're going to have some different views on what we see in the art of Sidney Lawrence around Juneau.
And Jim, you're going to do the historical perspective on this. Lawrence is world famous, and rightly so, because his paintings have a terrific realism to them that kind of I would imagine would be great help to a historian looking at the trying to assemble the history of a place, because it gives you like almost a photographic view, but with really artist's sense.
There are a lot of photographs of the same scenes that he, and you know, being an artist, he had a considerable poetic license, and so certain things are emphasized in there, and we have original photographs, some of them actually taken by him, of the same scenes, and see what he's trying to emphasize and why it looks so different, 80, 90 years ago than it does now.
From a naturalistic standpoint, Richard, I think in many ways the eye that you get when you see one of his paintings is so so able to capture a tiny detail or something like that, that it almost like brings the thing alive. Do you find that he was accurate?
Yeah. When we look at particularly the backgrounds of these paintings, we can often match them up with Juno skylines. And that's one of the things we'll be working on. When we divvied up these paintings, Mike and Jim tended to take the ones that have more cultural stuff in them, an old boat in the foreground, or a guy by a campfire out in the Mendenhall Flats. And I took the ones that are more pristine looking, in, for the most part. And they also happened to be out the road. And as I looked at them, the thing that they all had in common, and didn't realize this until kind of taking my assignment and going over it, was that they all were painted in what I call uplift meadow or parkland, places that used to be tidal that have been raised by glacial rebound. And that results in a aesthetically beautiful landscape with little patches of trees instead of, you know, uniform closed forest. Lawrence didn't seem to paint too many dense forest scenes.
Yeah, it always though the water was like a component. It was like you look at a Lawrence painting, you almost try to figure where the water is, because it's always kind of like a signature somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that because of his choice of background? Is that like a natural feature of uplift land?
Well, he's certainly well known for his marine paintings, just as much as his paintings of Denali, but the ones that I'm working on aren't all dominated by water. Some of them are pure meadow scenes. He appears to have loved iris. It's in several of the pictures that I'm going to interpret, and that's another whole natural history.
I see nodding heads here. Is that is there history there of some kind, or?
No, just I observed the same thing, is that I had seen those same meadowlands and stuff. Went back to see one of his paintings in Ohio last year.
Mike, what did you specialize in when you divvied up the paintings?
I'm going to talk about wide range. I sort of picked up the ones I liked because I was...
you got to choose first.
Yeah, right. The museum, by the way, we probably ought to mention that many of the paintings that we're going to talk about are hanging in the exhibit. We're going to talk about 20 or 25. There are some of those paintings are in the exhibit displayed, and the our audience can look at them before and after our talk and make their own judgments as to what they see in the paintings.
This is a rare opportunity because when you look at a piece of art, I'm usually alone. Maybe I'm with some friends or something like that, but I'm not usually with experts. And it sounds to me like this is a terrific opportunity to hear from you guys and then to have some time to walk down and with that new perspective in mind, then to see the painting anew and find another thing in it, which is always a thrill with a painter as wonderful as Sidney Lawrence.
We hope it works out that way. A lot of our paintings that we're going to talk about are available only to us digitally. They're not on the wall, but we'll do our best. And we've got some decent digital images of the ones that aren't there in the flesh.
Who thought this up? Was this you?
To invite
these three guys.
I'm not entirely sure. I've been in the position that I'm in for about 2 months now.
Yeah.
So maybe they have an idea. Did maybe our director, Jane Lindsay, contacted them, or... What do you think, Mike?
I don't remember. It just sort of happened because we all see each other frequently.
But this is it's like a wonderful piece of assembly. Somebody planned it, you know. What I mean? But yeah, this is really an exciting opportunity for a lot of people. What time do people have to be where in order to see this?
Yeah, the coffee and collection starts at the museum at 10:30, and then we're repeating the presentation at 1:30. So at 10:30 and 1:30.
10:30 and 1:30, and this is at the Juno Douglas City Museum.
Yes.
Right off the
corner of 4th and Main.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I knew we could do it. And your hosts for this event will be Mike Blackwell, Jim Garrity, and Richard Karstensen, looking at the paintings of Sidney Lawrence from the perspective of three experts in their field. Sounds like just a fascinating and wonderful opportunity to really get into what Sidney Lawrence was doing in Southeast Alaska. Thanks very much for turning us on to this wonderful opportunity.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
What do you get if you take a small town residential building and all the stuff confiscated from a marijuana drug bust, and then combine those things with one creative school teacher and a super motivated teen? You get the Whittier Community School Hydroponic Garden, a year-round growing operation that supplies residents with fresh vegetables and students with hands-on learning experiences.
You're sort of in charge of this garden, is that true?
Yes, I guess so. But our class usually comes down every day and then basically waters and gives them nutrients and...
That's 12-year-old Joey Lipscomb. He knows everything that's growing in this warm, well-lit room. Joey says the veggies ripening here today are destined for sale in their community apartment building, the BTI.
That's where basically everyone in Whittier lives, and we have a farming market about every month. And then when we first started this year again, we had to plant as many varieties of stuff as we could. And then we go over there and we do a farmer's market, and then we check which vegetables do the best, and then we plant more of those.
He is our school biologist. He takes care of our fish tanks. He takes care of our garden. He problem solves everything.
Stephanie Burgoon is Joey's teacher.
So if something isn't working, he's in there problem solving it, trying to figure out how to make it better. He's just so darn excited about it that I can't stop him ever.
Joey says zoology is his favorite subject, but that he likes anything that's living and growing. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
It's about 14 minutes before 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. And I have in the studio with me a group of young and aspiring poets. There's a project that goes on at the in the Juneau Douglas High School. It's a freshman poetry, essentially a slam. The liaison person for this is Andrea Budbill. She's here with us. And in the studio are Amy Spencer, Ashley Carella, Brianna Stephen Piper, and Elise Arthur, and all Aliza?
Alize.
Alize, okay. Well, I almost got it right. Anyway, but so this project, what do you do? How does this work? Anybody? Yeah,
well,
you'll do.
Basically,
this is Amy.
Yeah, you can go to the Poetry Slam and sign up to do the open mic, where anybody can come and sign up and go and do like a song or a story or read a poem. And then after that, there's going to be a slam where some people go up and read their poetry and compete to win the slam. And there's judges in the crowd, and they get judged on their poetry. And it's really fun to just go and listen and stuff.
Go ahead.
And
can you move right up on that microphone? Yeah. Good. Okay.
And there are... there's a couple student judges as well. Some of our peers will be participating in the judging. And there are 3 rounds. When you do the competition itself, you're supposed to be prepared with 3 different pieces you've written. And if you get chosen to go in each round, and you can move forward and keep going.
So where are you standing in the where has the competition started yet?
No.
So you're here at the – everybody's in at this point. There's the eliminations haven't started to happen.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Okay, that was Ashley that was talking to us. Okay. So, Alize, are you an exchange student or
– No, I'm from California.
You're from California.
Just moved here.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I just moved here.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Got slurped up into this project. Cool. So all of you are freshmen, right?
Yeah.
First year high school students, right? Okay. And Brianna, you all are carrying pieces of paper with you.
Yeah.
So are these the poems that you're going to present?
I'm not sure. The one I have isn't the one that I'm going to be reading at the slam. But
oh, okay. Well, can you read it anyway?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to have a poetry slam right here on the air. This is the moment now. We have the judges are in Douglas, and 2 of them are out the road, and 1 is on Gustavus. So we'll be getting their votes in by mail. But anyway, so you're up.
Okay.
Right into the mic so we can hear the poem.
Without even knowing it, they both developed habits of biting their nails and crossing their fingers. And when they walked, their steps were the same, but they were going separate ways. So soon enough, they both gave up because it was so hard to see what was right there in front of them, pacing back and forth. And then they fell apart without even knowing it.
Hmm. So our judges will take a moment to record their marks, and then we'll see the signs flash up, right? That's the way a slam works, 7, 3, 15, etc. So, okay. So we'll hold the voting until the very end. So who would like to go next?
I wrote a haiku, and it's about Hurricane Sandy. Thunder and lightning killing everybody. Light is darkness. Done.
16 syllables. Did we count? Did the judges get an accurate count? Okay. Thank you.
No.
No? Okay. And who's next?
Okay, I'll go.
Okay.
This one's called Little Kid. I remember the days when I was a little kid. I didn't care how I dressed. I didn't care how I acted. I remember the days when makeup was a toy. I used it in all the wrong ways, though I didn't care much either. I remember the days when you could hang out with boys. No one thought you were dating. No one thought we were together. I remember the days when we pretended school was a separate world. Now others could care less. Insecure, we're now pretty girls. And before, we were all the best.
Mm. And?
Okay.
This is Ashley. Amy.
We talk. Always talking. Never-ending conversation about anything, everything. We laugh, always laughing, humoring each other with endless wit and charm. We lie, always lying, lying about what we both know is true. We love, always loving, secretly wishing that the other would take the first step. We wait, always waiting, patiently waiting for when we admit that we talk, laugh, lie, love, and write for each other.
So here's my question. How many of you had written a poem before this?
I like to write poems a lot, so.
You do?
Yeah.
How about the rest of you?
I've written a billion.
Have you? So Alice is a poet. And
I'm a writer. I love writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the four that I have here are, how about you, Amy?
I don't really write poetry that often. I kind of, just for class assignments, mostly I write what I see, like journalism and stuff.
Do any of you read poetry?
All the time. Edgar Allan Poe.
Now that you're writing and reading to other people like this, does it change the way you read poetry? Go ahead.
I think in a way it does change.
You need to be right on that thing, so I'm sorry to keep moving you around.
I think in a way it changes our perspective on poetry. Like, we respect it more and we can relate to the pieces more. When we write poetry, it's very personal, and some poems are silly and don't make sense and have no relations, but other poems, like the ones we've read today, are personal, and they carry a part of us that most poems we read and respect do.
You're part of a freshman class of what? You got 40, 50, how many people are there in the freshman class?
Well, per class, there's about 30-something students.
So about 30 students per class. What I'm trying to do is to get a percentage here. In other words, of the people who are going to actually present in the Poetry Slam, what portion of the freshman class is that?
Three. Yeah.
5%.
Yeah.
How do the rest of the students react to this?
It all depends.
Are you presenting to them? Are they the ones who will be hearing you?
Anyone who wants to come to the Poetry Slam can come, and other people can perform in it too, like not just the freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
There's
anyone
open
that
mic.
Wants to.
Go ahead.
So this is part of the monthly Poetry Slams with Wishkanadei.
Yeah.
And it just happens that this month, this is Andrea Budville speaking, I'm doing an internship at JDHS where I'm student teaching. And so these are student teaching in two advanced freshman classes. Literature classes. So these, we're sort of helping set everything up, and they're helping with advertising and helping with setup and taking donations and everything. And then these are some of the students who will be reading in the Poetry Slam. So it's part of the Wishkanadei program. We're just sort of teaming up for this one in particular. So it's just like any of the other ones. And this one is in the JDHS auditorium. So hopefully, we're going to get a pretty big audience this time.
But I was trying to get to the reaction of the other students who are not involved in this, and I don't know if that's. I don't know. Do you sense that? Do you have a feeling that these people know that you're doing poetry, and what does that do? Go ahead.
It seems like some of them think it's cool and they think that it's brave that people will go up and do poetry, but other ones they just like judge before they go. You know, like high school students do.
Mm. Go ahead.
I went to the Poetry Slam last month, and because our literature teacher was offering extra credit for any students that went, and I actually ended up having a really good time. Like, it was actually a lot of fun, and there were some very talented people, and it was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be.
When will the presentation be?
Tonight? It's tonight at 6 o'clock is sign up, 6:30 is the open mic part, and 7 o'clock is the Poetry Slam.
Public invited?
Yes.
Okay, and it's in the
always.
JDHS auditorium.
It's in the auditorium, and like always with the Wishkanadei, donations are appreciated, and it's going to be really fun.
It sounds like
a
gas. Are you guys having fun doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
All right.
Amazing.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming down and letting us know that this is available. 6 o'clock tonight is the opening, is the sign-up, right?
Yeah, sign-up.
And the actual slam begins at?
7 o'clock.
7 p.m. Okay. Thank you so much. A terrific opportunity, and thank you for sharing your poems with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. About 3 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, just finishing up today's edition of Juneau Afternoon. The Weather Bureau has just issued an update for the weather forecast, and they're forecasting strong winds from late tonight through Saturday afternoon, with a high wind watch from Saturday afternoon through Saturday evening. Tonight, they're saying we'll have numerous snow and rain showers with a snow accumulation up to an inch and lows around 24. The area will be 26, locally windy. Southeast winds about 15 to 25 miles per hour, except 20 to 30 miles per hour, with gusts up to 35 miles per hour near downtown Juneau and Douglas. And those gusts could increase to 40 miles per hour late tonight. And then Saturday, isolated snow showers in the morning, and then mostly sunny in the afternoon, locally very windy. Highs around 31. Southeast winds 20 to 30 with gusts to 40, and downtown Juneau and Douglas gusts to 30 and to 40 with gusts, winds of 30 to 40 with gusts up to around 55 miles per hour. So a gusty, windy weekend to look forward to. Another thing to look forward to on Monday, Jacquie Bowsler will be hosting. She's going to get an update on CBJ activities with City Manager Kim Kiefer. Bartlett Regional Hospital's new CEO Chris Harf will be here, and we'll find out about high school swim season. The team is having their annual Christmas tree sale. KTOO Juneau is on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO. That's on 101.7. In Gustavus, you can hear a signal from K201 AM on 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 megahertz. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we're on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can hear KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN is heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL is found on digital channel 873. And we're also online at www.ktoo.org. Music today has been largely provided by Ron McFarlane and William Sims from an album called Two Lutes, lute duets from England's Golden Age.